till this past December, the last pre-owned car that we bought was way back in the 20th century. It was 14 years old, had a lot of miles on it, but we took good care of it, which is why it lasted so long. But it came time to trade it, and I liked that car because operating it was so simple. But between 1999 and 2011, technology took off the face of the map, and the model we purchased is way too smart for me. There are things on it that I don't know how to do. Yeah, we read the directions. I mean, I can make it start, and it'll go, and it'll stop, and it'll turn, and even back up with a camera. But that's all I need to know. I'll leave the rest to Libby, and then I can get back to doing something I know how to do. Put me on a motorbike, and I'm fine. The speed of life. Y'all know what I'm talking about. It's become so swift. It jerks us around. And without the luxury of having time to absorb it. So we watch as sane people try to make sense of the recent irrational evil up in Boston. And it jerks the world and our country all over the place. And that's precisely where we find the disciples of Jesus in the second ending of the fourth gospel, chapter 21. Everybody's familiar with this story. We've used it a lot. I've preached on it a lot because it's Easter season and this is an Easter text. But we'll try to see something different. The disciples had been riding an emotional roller coaster since Good Friday. Then came Easter, and they're jerked this way and they're jerked that way. Trying to keep up with Jesus will wear you out. So they decided they'd had enough. And they returned to something they were good at. Fishing. Their theological underpinnings had been yanked out from under them because they were trying to deal with the unanswerable question of how does God fit into this kind of world with so much evil in it? Isn't that the question of the ages? How do we fit God into this stuff that happens that it makes no sense? So most folks just hope that God will just do whatever God does without involving us too deeply. It's understandable to want to step aside as the world turns. But the surest thing that I can say about the season of Easter is that God is not finished with us yet. He pursues us as Jesus did the disciples up in the Galilee, prodding us not to give up on our mission in life. Sea of Galilee was a safe harbor for the disciples. And it was a long way from Jerusalem. For the fishermen, it's what they knew. It's what they had done for years, and they were good at it before Jesus showed up and called them to follow him. Now that Jesus wasn't around full time anymore, he'd show up and then he'd disappear, off and on kind of thing. Now that he was no longer around, they decided they didn't need to waste any time fishing for men. And they were out of their league at that anyhow. So they returned to the vocation of fishing for fish. But they weren't very successful at that anymore either. Fished all night and caught nothing. But they still had something very precious. The gift of another day. And they tried to make the most out of it. Sort of. On an earlier day, Jesus challenged them to drop their nets and he'd light up their lives. They were captivated by his magnetism. And it was a privilege of a lifetime, those 3 years. Think of what got packed into those 3 years. To witness firsthand the miracles, the mighty miracles of God, that the lame walked and the blind saw and the deaf heard and the naked were clothed and the hungry were fed. And think of the Sunday school class they got to attend. Taught the Bible by the guy who inspired it. And then that fateful day when Jesus got himself crucified for sedition. And then the third day after that, and their heads are spinning. And the women reported that Jesus came back from the grave. He had broken the chains of death. Talk about being jerked all over the place. And hearken back to that day when Jesus gave Simon Peter instant status. When he would be the rock on which his church would be built. Visions of sugar plums danced in his head. Alas, Simon's loyalty turned out to be worse than Judas. Judas only gave up on Jesus one time. Maggie Thatcher is said to have said, "If you want something said, get a man. If you want something done, get a woman." Now, that sure sounds like her. I don't know if she said it or not. But this is Jesus with his disciples. The time for words is over. It's time to get something done. It's not enough for Peter to say he loves Jesus, even three times, one for every denial. Jesus just said, "It's time to tend my lambs." Yeah, I'm sure that those of us who are fortunate enough to still be here understand the grace of another day. I hope we appreciate it, because those who left us yesterday have run out of tomorrows. How blessed we are to enjoy the grace of this day. Because after so many days, we forget how many, because they add up. Who doesn't take our days for granted? The scriptures are full of grace days. When Zechariah and Elizabeth were beyond the age of child rearing, John the Baptist came along. A grace day. Elijah was at the point of suicide in a cave when God said, "Stop pitying yourself and get back in the fight." Paul, confronted on his way to Damascus to persecute the church of Jesus, and then ended up planting churches. Today's gospel is the story of somebody who felt like they were out of place. They were given a second chance. As we move through our 375th anniversary celebration year, what a day it was when God granted Roger Williams the grace of another day on this continent. Look at what he did with it. That's the thing about days. We're all alike in many ways in which we're different. But we're all alike in that regard that everybody has days. It's what we do with them. It's the only thing that matters. And we come to church to think about it. Where else do we go to think about what we're going to do with our days? That's why we come to worship. Because a lot of people do some rotten things with their days. When life ambushes us at Saturday night's party, Sunday morning worship allows us time to pause and to seek the will of God for our lives. Now, I've never been much for thinking about a theology or developing a theology of the afterlife. It's just something I've never gotten involved in. I'm too much involved in this life to think about the next one. It'll all pan out in the end anyway. But everybody has some view or understanding of heaven, if you're normal. Everybody has some view of what heaven is like. Streets of gold, white robes, musical harps, angelic choirs. My daddy asked me once, he said, "I wonder if there'll be fishing in heaven." Now, I couldn't tell him no. No doubt Jesus' disciples would love it. Because fishing is a constant exercise in hope. So why not? My view of heaven is being given the gift of another day. In another way. In another place. Not to vegetate, but to cultivate. There'll be no need for rocking chairs. Maybe motorbikes, but no rocking chairs. When Peter went back to his boat to get in his rocking chair, John shows that God can be a bigger interruption than any terrorist. Jesus reappeared after Easter to disrupt the disciples and to provide them with a dose of reality, renewing their call to serve. Too often we're like the cartoon of the man with the frizzed hair and legs trembling, shirt tail hanging out. Said, "Doctor, I'd like to see things a little less clearly. Just to float around in our safe harbors and retreat into the consolation of what we're good at. How irritating to have to grow or to try something new that we're not so good at. To look forward instead of backwards." What if Peter had been like some of these May Day protesters? "Let somebody else feed your lambs. Loving you should be enough. What more do you want? How much can a guy take? This isn't fair." Yeah, if it was fair, it wouldn't be grace. So another day is an occasion to not make the same mistake twice. To turn your creeds into deeds. The grace of another day brings with it the difficult challenge to change. Maybe you see that holy guacamole sign, "Prayer changes things." And I like to add, well, if not, it changes us. Because some changes are welcome. True enough. Getting well from surgery is a welcome change. Graduating from school is a welcome change. Moving to a better situation, welcome. But most changes get us out of our routine. Because all transitions, is another word for change, all transitions involve movement, and that means they are ambivalent. In every change, we stand to gain something we didn't have and lose something we had. And Jesus' appearance to the disciples meant they had to change. They had to face what they were running away from. How hard that is to do. Facing something we dread distorts how we see ourselves, how we see others, how we see God. Mark Twain said, "You can't see clearly when your imagination's out of focus." And that's why Jesus appeared by the sea, to refocus his fledgling church. You can't see clearly when your faith is unfocused. That's why we come to church. John's focus is on the disciples. Tells us about the disciples. Because it's hard to imagine what Jesus must have felt. It's interesting that nothing about what Jesus must have felt. It's all about what the disciples were doing or didn't do. What in the world? How did Jesus feel? Those on the boat were the heart of the team that he had assembled and spent his entire ministry preparing to save the world. Everything he did depended on them. They're out spending the night fishing. Didn't anything he stood for get through to them? Was it to all end there where it began full circle? Only 7 of the original 12 were left. And all they had was what we have. The grace of another day. Another day for Peter. Another opportunity. Another chance to make amends for his failure. Still time for Peter to become the fiery preacher of Pentecost when 3,000 souls were converted. Another day for Peter to reach out to a Gentile named Cornelius. Groundbreaking events. All of these. Another day for Peter to be delivered from prison miraculously. Another day for him to deserve to carry those keys to the kingdom that Jesus bestowed upon him. Another day for Peter to live up to his name, Rocky. Another day to run out of days in Rome when Peter was martyred for the Lord. I recently saw a very good movie called Flight. It stars Denzel Washington. He's one of my favorite actors. I want to see anything he's in. I recommend Flight. It's about a plane crash, sure enough. But it's more about addiction and what that can do to somebody. So, like Simon Peter, there's plenty of failure. The hero's struggle is with constant lying and denial. Even though he was a brilliant pilot, he saved lots of lives in a crisis. But after much misery in terms of destroyed relationships, he finally faced his dilemma and for once told the truth. And it hurt. The truth hurts. sometimes. He admitted that he was stoned when the plane went down. He could have lied again. He could have gotten out of it. Getting away with stuff is what he's used to doing. But because this time he manned up, told the truth, he ended up being sent to the penitentiary where he had no choice but to be sober. And the final line of this film was classic. Here he is in an AA group in jail describing his painful story and telling nothing but the truth. And he said, this may sound strange to y'all coming from a jailhouse, but for the first time in my life, I'm free. That's the best thing about having days, even behind bars. We can turn it around if we have the guts to face whatever it is we're running away from. Another day. It's just a little thing. We experience them every day, 24 hours. They come and go with regularity, but for the miserable, they seem to never end. And for those who are happy, they fly by way too fast. It's the way we navigate through this thing called life. Living out our days. Nevertheless, Jesus makes it clear that the gift of life is not to be taken lightly. The worst thing anybody can do is to waste a life, theirs or somebody else's. God knows sooner or later the day is coming when there are no more days. That's when Jesus got out of his pastoral role with Peter. And he got into his prophetic role. He said, someday when you grow old, you're going to stretch out your hands and somebody else is going to take you where you don't want to go. Man, taken. Can you feel the helplessness of that? He's telling not just Peter, but all of us. Now is your opportunity to get it right. Like the hymn, Dear Lord and Father of Mankind, there's a line in it that says, in simple trust like theirs who heard, by the Syrian Sea, the gracious calling of the Lord, let us, like them, without a word, rise up and follow thee.